Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am in the studio today, sitting in for Dan McKay on the right, Senator Todd Weiler.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left, State Senator Jim DeBacker.
Good morning, Natalie.
A lot happening in local news. We can have a lively and fun conversation, but let's start with Operation Rio Grande. We'll do the elections in the second segment.
It's about time.
What do you think, Todd?
It's about time.
Say what it is, Natalie. So, a lot of people don't know.
Well, I mean, so you have, I'm going to call him the Troika, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, Speaker Greg Hughes, and our good Mayor Ben McAdams coming together, joining with Mayor Biskupski and the law enforcement officials. And what? They arrested 87 people in the Rio Grande area? I mean, a show of force. But they've been really clear that it's more than a show of force.
They arrested people who are committing crimes in public, in our capital city, openly and defiantly, and they should have been arrested 2 years ago. They should have been arrested 3 years ago. And what a lot of people don't realize is there's a whole string, there's a whole network of people, many of them from South America, who are feeding the drugs to this community. We know who they are. We know where they're from. We know where they live. And we have been literally having police officers standing there on the street corners watching them sell drugs to the homeless and other, you know, people looking for drugs for years and just watching them do this. And yes, now we're arresting them. And hallelujah.
You think too late?
Well, I'm saying finally. Yeah, I think it could have happened a lot earlier.
Yeah. And I think most people would agree with you on that.
You know, it was very interesting because the Salt Lake County Democrats met on Saturday to replace Sheriff Winder. And one of those Democrats was endorsed by Chris Burbank, who said, you know, under our watch, it wasn't this bad. But once we left, it exploded. And it has exploded in the last 2 years. And how ironic that Mayor Biskupski ran for office on this homelessness issue. And since she's been in office, it's gotten much, much worse. Yeah. Now, I think there's still time to pull it around before she runs for re-election. But if she doesn't, I think she's toast.
Jim, how do you see this?
As most things in Utah, the fault lays back with the legislature.
Okay. Going to go right to Capitol Hill on this.
We
I agree,
passed,
it's Jim's fault.
We passed criminal justice reform, and it was two parts, part A, part B. We are going to lower some of the penalties, and we're going to change things because they're unfair, and judges needed more ways to handle people, and we're going to make some things that are felonies, not felonies. And part B, which was just as important, maybe more important than part A, was we're going to put millions of dollars of state money into drug courts and into rehab and into helping people that were pulling off the streets. And guess what happened? The legislature was there for lowering the penalties, but they weren't there for the money. Mm-hmm. So what happened? The sheriff said, well, I won't use the language that the sheriff said, but he said, we're not going to bring all of those people in here. We are at capacity. We can't have more people in the jail. It is physically a problem for the inmates as well as the officers. And for 17 months, people were not arrested. And it all goes back to the legislature that just wouldn't do their job and didn't provide the money and created the law. It was like when the feds give us orders and then not the money. That's what happened. So if you want to see why did things blossom, why did all these people come from all over, it was because word went out that you won't go to jail in Utah. And why didn't we go to jail? Because the legislature didn't follow through with their promise.
Todd, you're a Capitol Hill guy, and this is your area of expertise.
I agree with Jim.
Okay.
That part of the problem is lack of funding for mental health treatment, and part of the problem is lack of jail beds. But amazingly, once Jim Winder resigns, now we've found some jail beds in Salt Lake County. And I like Sheriff Winder, generally speaking, and I understand why he did what he did. But when he took it off limits, he basically sent a chilling message among this homeless community that you can do anything you want short of a felony.
And this state won't do anything.
And you're not going to get
arrested.
So
who's this Rosie Rivera? Do either of you gentlemen know her?
Wasn't she the one, Rosie the Riveter from World War II? I love those posters.
I have a daughter named Rosie, and so when I saw that we have a new Salt Lake County sheriff that's a woman named Rosie, I was like, this is great.
You know, I don't know Rosie, but reading about her, she was a single mother at the age of 15 and has, you know, clawed back and gotten her education and was promoted. And
the sheriff of our largest county.
Now the sheriff. I mean, what a great story.
What are they going to do with these people they've arrested?
I spent...
Jim's got a big house.
I spent 3 hours yesterday with the police officers on the west side as a part of the operation. Wow. I saw like Highway Patrol out there. Mm-hmm. And it was terrific seeing the Highway Patrol. They had a whole new dimension.
The Salt Lake Highway Patrol or Utah Highway Patrol?
Did I say Salt Lake?
Yeah,
the Utah Highway Patrol. I mean, they took their hats off, which I think is good
the
when they're going
off.
In the when they're going in the inner city. But to watch them, I think they had a new energy and a new look and a new view. I think whether the state has the guts to continue this. And another question: what's going to happen to our freeways if we've got 17 officers? In that part of the city, that's going to be another issue. What
can speed a little
more? Going to take care of that?
So I can go as fast as I want.
Yeah, well, if you're ever going to go
politically,
fast.
Politically, guys, break down what's going on in this dynamic with the Speaker of the House being so involved, the mayor of the central city, the mayor of the county, and Lieutenant Governor Cox representing Governor Herbert on this.
Well, I may have a different perspective. But we all know, I really like Ben McAdams, and I really like Jackie Paskowski, but they're not getting along real well, and there's mm-hmm. reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Like that Mayor McAdams actively campaigned against her?
Yes, and worked for her predecessor. And,
yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. I think that the state stepped in, realizing that maybe these two weren't going to join hands and combat this problem and fix it all on their own. Plus, this is the capital city of the state. I mean, and so I'm glad the state's involved. Plus, quite frankly, the state's bringing resources to the table.
How
that
about
the city
the dynamics between the governor's office and the speaker on this? You would think this would be a governor's lead, the speaker worrying about things. But
I think Spencer Cox has been charged by the governor. And so I think this is a great opportunity for Spencer Cox, many who think he might want to be governor mm-hmm. in 3 years to have a chance to show his leadership skills. I mean, we all kind of jeer when Greg Hughes and the governor's office are fighting. Now they're kind of joining forces and doing, I think, some good. And I think we ought to be grateful for that.
Jim, politics of this issue?
Yeah, like imagine that. Two high-profile politicians don't get along. And Paskowski and McAdams don't get along. But, the governor and the speaker can barely be in the same room. Hatch and Lee are sniping. It's just the nature. It's just we never have two Democrats that have a high profile to snipe at each other. It means we're starting to arrive.
I think it's interesting watching Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox on this. He's very good in public.
He is smooth.
Yeah, he is, and he's a guy with depth. And it's been kind of fun to see Herbert let him go.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is happening. I think that Herbert wants to turn over the reins to Spencer Cox. I think that. The governor has no imagination, never has. He's just Mr. Dithering. And it was Hughes. This is 100% Hughes. He's moving his thing down there. He's going crazy with press conferences. He's Mr. Action. So one day the governor is noticing all this. He's going, hey, wait a minute. What about me? Don't forget about me. Calls a meeting of everybody and then throws his guy in there. This is part of that whole...
His best guy.
Yeah. So the election... The next gubernatorial election is underway, and this is the first swing in it. As far
remember,
as
close us out here, Todd, because that's
year,
a big statement.
Last year, they were going to announce where the four shelters were, and all the media was gathered, and they waited for like 3 hours, and they came out and said, "Yeah, we're not going to announce that today." That was at the city county building with Mayor Paskowski. Hughes was there. He was running back and forth trying. Hughes has been very involved in this homeless issue. He's not a Johnny-come-lately.
He's a property owner downtown.
He works with properties in troubled neighborhoods, and I think he grew up in fighting on the streets in Pittsburgh, so I think he genuinely wants to solve this problem.
Yeah, going to be
interesting.
I agree
100%.
Going to be interesting. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm in the studio with Senator Todd Weiler and Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we'll talk about local elections.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Senator Todd Weiler on the right.
This is DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Guys, I want to talk about the results of the elections, but before we do that, let's go to Charlottesville, Virginia, and talk about what's happened in this country over the past week. It's really been... I don't know. It's tugged at the heartstrings, Todd.
Yes. And white supremacy is wrong.
Yeah.
Neo-Nazism is
despicable to me. Make it real clear here on both sides of the aisle.
But, and maybe I should say instead of but, you know, we've been seeing racism for several years with Antifa, if I'm saying that right, Black Lives Matter and others. I don't know that it gets equal coverage in the media. And I was okay with Trump's first statement. I liked his second statement on Monday a lot better. And then he kind of unwound everything and doubled down the first statement on Tuesday. But I do think the media is trying to hold Trump to this politically correct script, and he's not going to play along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what he's saying is right. I mean, they're saying he's not condemning. He has condemned neo-Nazism, unlike Obama, who would never say Muslim Islamic terrorists. You know, it took Trump 2 days, but he said neo-Nazism and is fascism.
Reading from his staff's scripted remarks.
Yes. But he did say it. Mm-hmm. They demanded he say it. He said it. But there was another group there that had came to fight, and they didn't have a permit. All of what he's saying is true, but he's not allowed to say it into political correctness. You can only condemn the one side. But when it comes to Black Lives Matter and Antifa and other things that have done, the media doesn't play by those same rules. So I am a little bit scratching my head.
Jim, I never thought I would see the President of the United States struggling to condemn neo-Nazism, KKK, and the like. I mean, he is uncomfortable.
But he did condemn them.
He did, but
Let's
he's uncomfortable
clear.
When he does
condemn
it.
Them.
Jim?
It was one of the saddest days I can remember in America when you cannot, in the first go-around, as the President of the United States, look in the camera and say with every fiber of your soul, not from some staff person and not the second, third, fourth time, where you can't just say it's a shameful, shocking, bad day for America when hundreds of torch-carrying young Nazis are marching on American cities. To not be able to say that is shockful. And it goes to the very core of Utah's Republican Party and of our National Republican Party. Where do you stand is the question that the Republicans are going to have to ask. Are they okay with that? Are they okay with him kind of tiptoeing along the line? Or are they going to come out? Utah's congressional delegation. Yeah, a few of them showed up at the rally to say, yeah, that was wrong. But they didn't censure this man. And they apparently think it's okay, and he's walking a line, and he's fine, and both sides did wrong. You know, this is not moral equivalency. And until Utah's Republican elected representatives come out wholeheartedly and not just say, oh, yeah, we're against white supremacy, but they look into their souls and they condemn and censure the person who's saying this, Republican or Democrat, we're not going to gain the trust of the American people back. I care about winning elections and the rest, but this goes to the very soul of the fundamental principles of our democracy, and I like the fact that the Speaker of the House and that more and more Republicans are saying, you know what, this is bull.
Todd, let's break it down in the Republican side, what happened. I mean, in local politics.
I got to ask Jim something.
Okay, you want to go.
In 1978, the ACLU went to court for the neo-Nazis for their right to march through Skokie, Illinois, which is a very Jewish community, because the First Amendment's that important. Jim, was the ACLU wrong in 1978?
Look, no. I think they.
Okay.
I think
would
Nazis,
the ACLU do that today? Because I don't think they
did
would.
It.
No, they didn't.
They were there.
They didn't go to court. They
were
there
to
watch.
I don't think they needed to go to
court.
They
were there to
because
watch.
I think they put out statements. I mean, that I had a really gulp at. But that, Senator, that.
My point is this: don't we want to live in a country where people as despicable as neo-Nazis can stand up and demonstrate and share their political beliefs as wrong as they are? Don't we want to live in
Senator,
that country?
My good friend.
You guys sound like you're on the Senate floor
from,
right here on both sides of the
from
aisle.
Davis County. We're not talking about their right. I don't say fire hose their opinions and waterboard them. I say, President, you have a First Amendment speech, obligation, responsibility to speak out boldly, strongly, and loudly and condemn Nazism on the streets of the United States of America.
And I heard him do that on Monday.
So, Senator
it
Hatch.
It was weak. It was a mouthful.
Senator Hatch is, I mean, Jim, you threw some, you know, some bombs at the soul of the Republican Party. So I want Todd to be able to respond to that. We had Senator Hatch saying that my brother fought Nazis. Let's call evil what it is. Mia Love spoke
elements.
At the rally.
There are elements of racism in the Republican Party in Utah and in all 49 states. And there are elements of racism in the Democratic Party in Utah and all 49 states. And it's wrong on both sides. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely wrong. And some of the immigration debates in Utah over the past 15 years have made me very uncomfortable because I felt like they are somewhat racially motivated. And I condemn that. I find that stuff disgusting.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Do you feel like our local congressional delegation has gone far enough to, challenge what the president did and what these...
I'm satisfied. I really
have
like...
Have you heard anything from Senator Lee? Anything?
I haven't heard anything from Senator Lee. I've heard a lot from Hatch. I've heard a lot from Mia Love, who spoke at the Unity Rally on Monday, which I attended. I was late. But I think there's been a lot of support there. Senator Lee, I haven't gone to his page and looked web page and looked at it. But but some of them have, I think, been very good on this.
Yeah. Okay, guys, let's go. Let's move to the. We had big elections this week. John Curtis comes out as the declared winner in the 3rd congressional district. That was the spotlight election. Big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan McKay has made a point on this program that the 3rd Congressional District is like one of the most Republican
plus 29
districts in the country.
Yeah.
And here you have a guy win it. Going away with who used to be a Democrat and who...
And Jason Chaffetz used to be a Democrat and Ronald Reagan used to be a Democrat.
Okay.
Somehow it was okay for them, but not for John Curtis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that Utah County surprised me here.
Yeah. I called Dan McKay a day or two ago. Actually, he called me And I said, who do you think is going to win? And he said, I think Harrod's going to win.
He's been saying that.
And I said, you're wrong. And I said, let's bet lunch. And so I texted him like at 8:15 last night.
Representative McKay owes you lunch.
I texted him like at 8:15. I said, you owe me lunch. Now, to be fair, right now Curtis is up by 52,000 votes. But there are still that many votes that are uncounted because of the mail-in ballots. I don't think the results will change.
Jim, were you surprised?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Look, all the yakety-yakety-yak, you had three candidates here. One extremely over the edge, more conservative than Cruz, somebody nobody liked personally
and this is
that
who,
worked with.
This is who
I'm
Ted Cruz supported.
I won't say their names because I don't want to be deflammatory. But you had
imagine,
one
Jim, holding
over
back.
Over the edge, just bat poop. You had one candidate on the edge. You had another one that was a golden boy, whose daddy's was famous and never did a thing for the people
and who
the state
stole
of Utah.
Gordon Hayward from the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, there
that
you
was
go.
Bad.
And then you had this kind of, by Utah County standards, flaming moderate. And they picked the flaming moderate.
Well, I think partially it was a negative knee-jerk reaction to all the ads. I couldn't stand the ads. I tweeted this week, the only ad I liked was the one Gary Herbert did on the radio endorsing Curtis, because I like Gary Herbert, and it was a friendly ad, and he was praising Curtis for not getting in the mucky muck of the negative campaigning. But Utahns, we say this every 2 years, Utahns do not like that negative campaigning.
Yeah.
They it's repulsive.
I think this is a good example of that.
Unless it works.
Well, because I think it was such a poor way to introduce himself to the Utah voting public for Tanner Ainge to have so much negative campaigning associated with
him. And again, that was
him.
Done by a PAC.
Yeah.
It wasn't done directly by him.
But look, my advice to all the golden boys, and they're usually golden boys with the golden names and the rich parents, whether they're Romneys or Huntsmans or Mathesons for that matter, or all of them that are there, not because they worked and included, but just because they get it by heredity. You know what? Go do something. Go accomplish something. Go get elected to a school board or a city council, then run for Congress.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we have in John Curtis someone, I'm going to speak from the political middle here, a very balanced, reasoned kind of guy that
proven
has
leader.
Experience. We're lucky that he's willing to step up and serve. And what's going to happen next is he's going to go face Kathy Allen, Dr. Kathy Allen, and Jim Bennett from the United Utah Party. This could be interesting.
The interesting thing is Bennett may have had a case to make had Herod won. But with Curtis in there, my prediction is Bennett will actually pull more votes away from Kathy Allen because she is so liberal, and he's, you know, but I don't see him pulling a lot of votes from John Curtis because he's a little bit moderate.
I want to ask both of you guys what this election cycle has meant for Count My Vote. In other words, if you break down this third congressional district and all these people that some chose to do the convention, some didn't, but
you know, it
Curtis took fifth in the convention.
Yeah,
and
he
come out on
the
top
last
when
ballot,
the voters
he ended up
say
with 29 votes out of 800 on the last ballot.
Is that right? Leave it to Todd to know something like that.
Wow.
Well, I mean, and now he
started off with more than that.
I mean, this is, I mean, everyone knows I have a long relationship, friendship with our former governor, Mike Leavitt, but he's done a lot to help this state. But I think Count My Vote will be one of his greatest legacies.
So
changing the election, the way we elect people in this state.
First of all, I have to say, from a technical standpoint, Senate Bill 54 did not apply to this election because we don't have a statute for a special election in the summer. But those principles were insisted upon by Governor Herbert for this election. Without Count My Vote, Senate Bill 54, we would have had a primary between Chris Herod and Deidre Henderson because neither of them got 60% at the convention. And I think Deidre Henderson would have won that primary, and I think she would have been a good congressman. So I still don't think Chris Herod would be the guy, would be the congressman.
You don't know.
I don't know
if
for sure.
Deidre would have gotten that.
But the problem with Senate Bill 54 is this three-way race, because now Curtis is going to have this political baggage that he only got 42%. He didn't get 50%. Kind of like how Trump didn't, you know, get a majority of the vote.
Yeah, Mike Leavitt didn't. His first election.
But it was more than 42. But we kind of need to solve.
I mean, we're
kind of need
hairs.
To solve this plurality issue, because next year, if Hatch doesn't run, we could have 10 or 12 people on the primary ballot.
And I just want to say to listeners, do you want choice or do you want, you know, this problem with plurality? I love the choice.
Yeah.
I love seeing candidates and let the best people compete.
You're pro-choice.
Other things you guys want to say about this election? I mean, there wasn't much happening other than this local, but Salt Lake City politics had some interesting things. The incumbents did really well.
We have two really bright, young city council people that I think are the next generation win.
Mm-hmm.
At least they're getting in. Chris Wharton and Amy Fowler. People that I worked hard for, I think they're going to get elected. I think they're going to change the face. They're both of them under 35. And I see a wave. I mean, I see the reaction back to Trump and this ideology. If the Democrats can do... When a wave election comes, you just more or less need to be standing on the beach, and you get a lot of people in. So it's up to the Democrats to get decent candidates standing on the beach, and we have a problem doing that. But this could be one of those giant wave years, and Democrats ought to be working this year so that next year we pick up a large number of legislative seats. I think.
Todd, any last thoughts on this election cycle?
Well, there's a lot of interesting races. Like in the Bountiful Mayor's race, the incumbent Randy Lewis had four challengers. Randy survived but finished second. His opponent is a well-known Democrat, but, you know, it's a nonpartisan race. So that's one to watch. Is Randy Lewis going to hold on to his mayoral seat in Bountiful? There seemed to be an anti-incumbent feel in Bountiful in this mm-hmm. primary. But again, this was just a primary, so these guys all advanced. They got through to the November election.
I'm from Murray, and there was a couple of high-profile things. Richard Snellgrove didn't do so well, and Mayor Snar is back in. He's been out for 4 years, I guess.
It's because Snellgrove doesn't have that mustache.
So you have Mayor Snar and Blair Camp fighting it out. Guys, it's time to go to gripes, and Todd, I hope you came ready with a gripe.
Well, my gripe, as usual, is the double standard from the media. They never called on Obama for refusing to say Muslim Islamic terrorist, which was a problem. And when Black Lives Matter has a racist demonstration or Antifa, they kind of get different treatment. And I'm not defending neo-Nazisms or white supremacy. That's deplorable to me. But I don't think those are covered equally.
Yeah.
Mine is simple. The state went crazy as we gave $30 million to help with the homeless situation over 3 years. And it was high fives and we're doing something. I asked the fiscal analyst's office to once again go over the numbers with a fine-tooth comb. How much money from the Utah fiscal analyst's office, how much money is Utah losing by not taking Medicaid expansion? A large amount of that would go to solving homeless problems. The figure $677,854,000 is how much money the state of Utah is rejecting as Utah's share of Medicaid expansion. It is unchristian, and it's stupid. And in this legislative session, every Democrat ought to make every Republican face up to that question and explain why we're not taking that money.
$678 million.
A year.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Wow. Hey, I want to do my best gym imitation, which means I have to throw my pen down, take my glasses off, throw them down, and go into my gripe. And I only have a silly gripe.
Insult the governor.
I got bit by a spider in the last week, and I got a little sore spot on my chin from it, and it's just itching and killing. I'm like, what are spiders doing crawling on me in the nighttime? That's my gripe. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, joined by Senator Todd Weiler and Senator Jim DeBacchus, program produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.